It's chaos.
It's a different type of Sunday scary.
It's your newest obsession.
It's Dirty Driving, a Formula One podcast.
We're the Hornsby sisters. I'm Katie.
And I'm Megan.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, and welcome back to the pod.
Another episode, another week. And this time, it's an episode of For Our Next Guest. Megan, give us our intro.
Today, we are so excited to host this guest. This guest is an author of the latest series of kids' books about the marvelous world of motorsport. He was introduced to the sport by the Netflix show Drive to Survive and fell in love at first watch, like so many of us have. He has masterfully taken the complicated sport and created not only one, but two beautiful and educational books that allow all of us to share the sport with the kids in our lives. Today, we welcome the author of Red Racer Books series, Andy Amendola.
Hi, Katie. Hi, Megan. I'm so happy to be here. It's so funny that we met, you know, in Austin, and now we're chatting on the pod. I love it.
It was actually the most amazing by chance meeting, thanks to Joe's Coffee. And really, maybe we should thank Haas and MoneyGram for this.
Definitely.
Yeah, we spotted the little Red Racers t-shirt you were wearing, and I was like, we should definitely say hello. And
I'm glad you did.
Yeah, I'm so glad we did too, because now not only do we have another friend in the F1 community, but now we have a wonderful connection to all of the great books that you've created to give to all the kids in our lives. Because while Megan and I don't have kids, we have plenty of kids we babysit, plenty of kids that, you know, we've got little cousins. I even said, I know I've said this to you before, but I'm going to start handing this book out to a couple of my friends. As a nice, easy intro and easily digestible intro to the sport.
Awesome. Love it.
So, okay. So like we said, we met in Austin, where we were there for the Circuit of the Americas. And we had a wonderful experience at the Grand Prix, but really, I think we ultimately owe all of our love of Formula One to Drive to Survive. So we always like to start off the interview with asking how people, you know, got their love of Formula One. So for to you, I'm gonna caveat it with, like, what was it about Drive to Survive that sparked your love of Formula One?
Yeah. So, you know, I think it goes back to how just like people find fandoms. You know, and I've thought about this a lot because I'm really obsessed with understanding the Netflix effect of it all, because it really has changed Formula One, especially in America. So, you know, what I've found is that you either are born into a fandom, like your parents went to a college that had a big football team, and then now for life, your kids and so on. It's like generational. The other way is like you're playing sports. If you play basketball growing up, you might start following your local team. But with F1, those don't really apply in the U.S. because there's not a lot of fans to begin with that pass it on. And it's not like we're going racing on the weekends, or, you know, karting isn't even that big here. So, you know, I'd known about F1, but I found it to be a very complicated, intimidating. I really didn't get it. It felt out of reach, like almost physically out of reach, because it doesn't come to the U.S. that often. And what Netflix did was like a cheat code almost, or like a secret passageway into F1 fandom, like fast forward you into F1 fandom. And that's really what it, you know, it did for me. Like, that was just the beginning, you know, and it kind of, you know, made it easier for me to understand. And they did it through the storytelling. I think that's really what they nailed, is that, you know, these drivers, they're driving around with a helmet, zooming around the track. It's hard to know who they are. But then they put those drivers' story up front, and they tell really good stories. You know, I come from marketing background, and we talk a lot about brand archetypes, and they're based off of storytelling archetypes, which are just innate to humans. There's heroes, villains, you know, there's a magician, a lover, an explorer, for example. Like, these are all characters that once you see them in a movie or in a show, you realize who they are, and in books too. And I think that's what they did really well. And like, you get to know these people beyond the track, and then that hooks you in. you know, and that's exactly what happened to me. It like breaks down those barriers of complexity and slowly, you know, gets you addicted to this amazing sport.
It's so interesting that you mentioned archetypes. So I watched two episodes last night because I knew we were going to talk about the Drive to Survive Netflix effect. So I was like, let me go back and watch two of the first season episodes. And now that you say that archetype, I'm literally thinking about, so I watched the episode about Romain Grosjean struggling to find himself. And you're right, though. Like, they, in that story, they made, you know, this kind of like underdog story of like K-Mag having the points and Romain not having the points. And then you have Gunther, who is kind of the villain. And they have this like, see, like they really do tug on our heartstrings, or maybe not our heartstrings, but tug on
the emotions. It's like, yeah, it's like, it's an emotional reaction. It's not like watch F1 because it's XYZ. It's like, check out this amazing story. And, you know, it just kind of ropes you in. And that's why I think we've seen so much fandom across like generations, much younger fans, you know, female fans, male fans, everyone is just like, you can relate to these stories, and they did a great job with it. You know, some of it is maybe a little manufactured, you know, and after Netflix, you know, I made my own kind of assumptions and come to love and like Drivers for different reasons, but it's a great way in, you know?
It's also very interesting how they paired the archetypes, the storytelling, with slowly providing more and more information over the course of the episode. There wasn't like the first episode is to get you sucked in, and episode two is here's all the information you need.
Right.
The information was like drip fed to you.
Yep. Little by little. So it's not like overwhelming. It's like, here, we're going to tell you a little about tires and why they matter in the context of this broader story, or, you know, qualifying and why that matters. Like, they worked it in and weaved it into the story seamlessly. So you're like learning about it without realizing it.
It doesn't feel like you're sitting there watching a docuseries. It feels like you're watching a reality TV show.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of people call it like the Housewives, the Real Housewives of Formula One. And yeah, that's, you know, those shows are a success for a reason.
Honestly, let's be honest. If it was the Real Housewives of Formula One, Gunther Steiner would be the leader. Like, he would be the one in charge.
He's definitely, you know, the outspoken troublemaker of the team principals. That's for sure. I mean, they nailed it with him, that like, he was, you know, gold for those first few seasons.
So then, and what part of that digging in? This is like, I kind of set you up with that question. So now you've like, I really did, because I think your analysis of it is wonderful. And it really is, I think, what I would hope to say, it's definitely what happened for Katie and I. It's definitely what happened for me. I think a lot of fans followed the same trajectory of being so engrossed in the season, then starting to watch, then trying to understand how we weren't fans before, and going through this kind of, oh, it's big in the US. Why is it suddenly big in the US? All of these thought processes. But the difference is at some point you then decided to start Red Racer. So what made you go from like, I'm fascinated, I love the sport, to I want to provide a context or a medium for kids to be engaged?
Yeah. So it was like a chain reaction, like a series of different things that just all fell into the place. And you know, one day, so let me just kind of walk you through it so you get it. So obviously Drive to Survive kind of lit that fuse for the fandom. And, you know, as I said, as soon as we finished the season three, we started watching, and I downloaded the F1 TV app. I was like, oh, it's $79. That seems fine. That's no problem.
It seems so cheap.
It does, for the amount of stuff you get. So we started, and the first race, the live race that we watched as a family, was the Monaco race of last year. So that's, you know, we started with Monaco, which is like peak F1. I mean, it's historic, glamorous. Everyone knows about the race in Monaco, even if you're not a fan of F1. So that was, and that year was pretty good race. You know, there was a lot of, you know, drama that happened. So that was the first kind of, you know, piece. And then after that, I was like, I'm going to start like digging into like the sport more. And I went to look for podcasts. I went deep into like YouTube and looked at all the videos and tried to learn about the tech side, the history of it. I started reading books. I started, you know, following all sorts of people on Twitter. Like I wasn't really active on Twitter a lot before, but then I found out that's where everyone is for F1. And I started getting into all of that, you know, and watching TV documentaries like that McLaren one, mm-hmm. That follows Alonso and Seffel van Doorn. I followed Rush. I watched Rush, you know, which is a great movie, not really a documentary, but it's amazing. And I think they do a great job of that storytelling too. Like, you know, the battle between, you know, drivers, even the inside team dynamics, and kind of you have like the glitz and glamour of it, and then you have the science of it with Niki Lauda. It's just, you know, that was a really cool thing. But I just started like soaking in all this content. I was like a sponge. And then as I was watching the season, and you know, last year the season was amazing. Every race was a banger. You know, the competition was so fierce. And it was just like, and when I say watch the race, I watch FP1, FP2, FP3, and qualifiers, you know, before watching the race. So I was like really into it. And, you know, I started like sharing on social about it. And some friends that I didn't even know liked F1, they were like, started messaging me. They're like, oh, you like F1 too? Cool. Like, did you guys find that too? Like, people came out of the woodwork that you didn't know.
Oh yeah, and like
weird.
Yeah.
Even today, I'll be like, yeah, like I got to go record an episode or whatever, and they're like, you know, it's the people that are, you know, maybe not my best friends, but my acquaintances, and they're like, what's the podcast about? And I'm like, Formula One, and they're like, no way, I know about Formula One, and I'm like, where have you been?
Yes, exactly. It's almost like before DTS, it was like Fight Club. You know, rule number one. Yeah. You know,
you don't talk about Formula.
Yeah. And they're like, you know, now it's like the opposite. And it's like, you know, I became one of those people that don't stop talking about CrossFit. You know, it's like, that's kind of the what happened to me. And as I was posting, one of my friends who also lives in Miami invited me into a group chat, like a WhatsApp chat with like maybe 30, 40 people. And that was a game changer for me because there's like, most of the people in that chat were, you know, longtime fans, and they had a lot of institutional knowledge. So I just like jumped in. I asked a bunch of questions. I'm like, I'm trying to, you know, what are some good things to watch? What are some resources? And they were super helpful. And what happened was I had a group of people talk about it. And like during the race weekends, like, you know, the chat would be on fire. Everyone would be talking, you know, it got me like that community piece, you know, that I wanted, you know. And then I think around that time I started looking for books for my kids because we have a nighttime reading ritual. I have two kids, they're 6 and 8, and me and my wife kind of swap off and read books to them every night. So I've been reading books to them for, you know, 8 years now.
Yeah.
And, a lot of those books are, you know, not that great, you know, so I take an active role in picking out books for them. And usually it's stuff that I like because that, you know, I learn new things and it's less boring for me because I've found you guys don't have kids, but you know, reading to kids is part of parenting. And there are some great books out there, but there's also some really not so great ones. and that's when I was started to, you know, throughout that kind of period, I was like, maybe I could write a book. And then when I actually went to look for books about F1, I could not find any. Like, there is very few of them that are out there, and most of them are very dated. And like, they had like photo. Like, there was one that I got that was had, you know, photos of cars from the 80s, but not like F1 cars, just regular cars. And they talked about like V8 engines. I'm like, we're not on. You know, that was, you know, a long time ago. So that's when I was like, maybe I should write a book about F1 for kids. That was like kind of the first like seed of the idea. And then what happened was all these Grand Prix started coming to the US. You know, I live in Miami and they announced the Miami Grand Prix. I was like, oh my God. And that chat group, we all kind of pitched in and like put a deposit in to get tickets. So like that was already going to be my first race. But once I started looking at tickets, I looked at Austin. And
mm-hmm. yeah.
coincidentally, I had a friend who used to live in Miami, but he moved to Austin like just before the pandemic. So I hadn't seen him in a couple years. And I started looking at the tickets. And I was like, I can get some general admission tickets. Not too bad. I don't have to pay for a hotel. And I just was like, I'm going to do it. And I went. And mm-hmm. that was like the turning point for me. Because you guys were at the races here. You saw how many people there was. You saw like the energy, the excitement. You got to see the cars. Like everything is just like, I don't know. It was like the, you know, amazing weekend. And it inspired me right away. Because on top of like all the other pieces like that it was taking off. And then shortly after they announced Vegas, I was like, wow, okay. So now we have three races in the US. And I, on the flight back, I just started like writing out a plan. And originally it was an idea for one book. And then I was like, nope, I'm going to write a whole series of it and like build it out. So I wrote like a marketing plan for the books before I actually started writing the book, my first book. And I hope to kind of build it out from there, but it was all those kind of things falling into place. And then the turning point was CODA. I mean, it was just so inspiring.
Yeah. I remember when the idea of Dirty Driving first came to be, and it was last year, silly season. Mm. And it was where's Valtteri going to go? Right. Is George Russell going to move to Mercedes moment? And I remember I had been thinking about like wanting to build a community and wanting to have just more people to talk about F1 with because of, you know, my friends used to call me the closet F1 fan because mm-hmm. I didn't have many people to talk to about it. And then I was like, okay, it's happening. This is the time to do it. And you just like have that moment and you're like, there's no turning back. We're going to full send and we're going to figure out how to do it and we're going to make it work. And now here we are sitting on our podcast with your book. And it's just like, I just wanted to take a moment to be like, okay, we're doing it. We're doing the damn thing.
Yes. It's amazing. I love it. It's so cool.
What I love about you mentioned Austin and that was your defining moment. What's so interesting is that we were sitting at Austin this year. So a year after you were in Austin, and it was wild to me, wild. And it shouldn't be wild. Like it should really, this should not be a crazy thing to think of. But I was sitting there and all of these people were like buzzing about it. There were people there that were just there because they got tickets. That's always going to happen for any sporting event. But the amount of people around where we were sitting in the grandstands that were trying to consume knowledge to understand. Not just to exist in the sport, but genuinely excited about learning about the sport. And I don't know if I can fully say that's thanks to the way Netflix told the story, but I definitely think there is a callback to what we were talking about, how the knowledge came from just learning about the drivers and the story of the season. And then the knowledge fell into place. So I think as more people join the fandom or, you know, go to their first race and maybe start learning more about whether they want to learn about aero or they want to learn about the, you know, the driver relation side, the business side, the finance side. As, you know, the story and the community builds out and people keep talking, it's like, it's just like the education is falling into place after the fact now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is interesting, kind of a dynamic.
Yeah. I mean, I think the sport lends itself to that because there are so many different kind of layers to it that you can, you know, you can like keep finding out new like interest areas and new information all the time. Like I learn stuff all the time. I don't think I could ever know everything there is to know. I don't think anyone can because it is so complicated and it's global, you know? So it is something that like I think kind of feeds on itself and it'll be just mm-hmm. kind of like it'll just keep growing and growing and growing. And once you're like hooked on it, it's like you just want more. You know? And I think for that Austin race, what was really cool is that last year There was an article that came out after, and it said like most of the people there, that was their first F1 race ever. That was me, you know, and I was amazed by that fact. And I think COTA is a little special in that way because Miami wasn't like full of race fans. A lot of people were there because they were, you know, it was more of an event, a party.
Yeah.
You know, but COTA is a little special. It's a little more down to earth, and it's like, it's a lot about the racing and the cars and their support series and all that stuff. And yeah, it's a great kind of first race to go to that really sparks, you know, a lifelong love, at least for me.
So you mentioned in all of that, the resources, like we can never have enough knowledge and we're always consuming, or at least for the three of us on this call, and I hope our listeners, they always are wanting to consume knowledge. So when you make the conscious decision to start the books, they're very knowledge-based. There is a lot of rich content that is, when I say masterfully, like reduced to be something that like a child can understand, because I'll be honest, the Aero stuff was difficult for me to understand. So taking those complicated concepts and boiling them down to something an eight-year-old can understand and understand the story of it is mastery. But where did you find your resources? Because that's always a question we seem to get, is like, where do I go to learn about this? So what resources did you turn to?
So first, thank you so much for saying that. That is very kind. And I really appreciate that. But I did a lot of research before I even started that, you know, that first book. So podcast was the first thing I went to. And I'm not like a big sports podcast guy. Yeah. To give you a little background on me, like I am a Latino American. My parents were immigrants. So growing up, they didn't watch football or a lot of sports. So I didn't have that like sports education. So for me to start like listening to podcasts about a sport was a different experience for me. So I did start with a lot of podcasts. And there's so many out there. You know, I started with more of like the traditional ones like Checkered Flag, just because, you know, it's a good F1 TV companion. It's a lot of the same presenters. And I love like Will Buxton, Rosanna Tennant, Julian Palmer, Sam Collins, and the Tech Talks.
Love him.
Very helpful. And then from there, I kind of, you know, just followed a lot of like news articles. There's some amazing journalists out there. I'm a big fan of like Elizabeth Blackstock, Hazel Southwell. There's even like long-term insiders. So I subscribe to Josie Ward's newsletter, and he's been to like every race for the last 30 years. Like he is the ultimate insider. And like, so like I use that to get into like the insider kind of rumors and stuff. Like he's always one step ahead of everybody else. Then social media, of course, like just started following a bunch of like different like experts in various spaces. YouTube is definitely a really good resource because you can just put F1 and then like aerodynamics or the most famous tracks or whatever. So like that is a really great resource. I found it so helpful, especially because it's a visual way of learning. The chats also helped, and I've since joined other chats and Discords because I'm not afraid to ask questions. I'm not an expert. I'm not an engineer. I am fascinated by it, and I'm a curious person, so I'm always asking. Even books and audiobooks, no judgments, because I really like the engineering side of it, and like STEM is a big component of the books. I read Adrian Newey's book. Yep. You know, How to Build a Car. And that was so interesting to me. And now I'm reading Racing with Rich Energy. And I'm listening to Total Competition, which is a book with Ross Braun, about Ross Braun, on audiobook. I think that's basically all the resources. But, you know, basically, it became my life, you know, like those funny TikToks where it's like, oh, it took over my personality. That's me, basically. And just because of what I do in my career is you know, branding and strategy, I'm just a researcher by heart. So I think you have to, it's a little bit is like go out and find it yourself. because there's not like one central resource. Although F1 TV is great because it mm-hmm. has the archives of all the races, and then they do something called Race in 30, which I'm a big fan of. And
we love the Race in 30.
Yeah,
it's love great. The Race in 30.
And I found that, like, even if the reason I like to watch FP1 and FP2 and the practice sessions, because there's a lot of, like, it's not the most exciting, but the commentators talk about stuff and they like fill that time by talking about like why the different names of the corners, like why are they called that? And like you get a lot of info that, you know, they don't really talk about during the race because the race is covering the action. So I basically just went in and soaked it in like a sponge as much as I could.
I have always been a big proponent. Like once you get someone interested in the race, Katie and I are big proponents of this. So start with the race, then add qualies. Because even in qualies, there's dead time when, you know, they're talking about just general things about F1. And every time, for the first couple of races I watched, every time they said something I didn't understand, I would write it down. And then after the session was over, I would Google everything.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember Googling, I watched one of the old races, it was like 2015, where they had all of the different tires. This is probably like 2 weeks into me being an F1 fan. They had all of the tire compound. Next thing you know, 30 minutes after the session, I'm like deep in the weeds of why they changed the names of tires. And that's what's so interesting about the sport is that you can – something sparks and the next thing you know, you're 45 minutes down a rabbit hole and you are like, I'm so invested in the history of the tire compound's names.
Totally. It's amazing. And I love tires. That's one of my latest kicks is tire strategy and compounds and all that stuff. But yeah, you can totally go – down these crazy rabbit holes. And what's cool is that like every little piece of the car has like a function, you know, every like little flap and sticky uppy bit and every little wing, and they're all like there with a purpose. And like, you could go down a rabbit hole just like understanding what the front wing and like these minor changes are, how it affects it. So yeah, that's why I like talking about the STEM piece, because I think it's like a great platform to engage mm-hmm. kids and people in general about like science, technology, math, and engineering, like things that like you grow up, you don't think about it. You don't think about all those pieces. So that's a big part of why I like it and why I like to include it in the books.
So one of the big things that I love about the books is that you have Red Racer, who is a male character, but then you also have Roxy, the engineer, who is a female. So in your books, they talk about STEM, but diversity is also a giant component. So how important was it for there to be a female character, and more importantly for it to be Roxy, the engineer, to be a female?
Yes, that was really important. You know, mm-hmm. when I started thinking about like the Red Racer books platform, I wanted it. One of the like core values was diversity and inclusion and full representation. You know, I have a daughter, I also have a son, but I want them to grow up in a world where there's like, it's not like cars are for boys and, you know, princesses are for girls. I don't want that to be the case. And, you know, I'm not fixing that by having a female character, but just starting to have them and show some kind of representation, I think is helpful. And what can I say? You know, I know I wanted characters because mm-hmm. like, you know, it could have just been an ABC book without characters, but kids, you know, are drawn to characters. And it helped me because both of them are kind of the guides and they kind of help explain things, especially in the second book. They can have a little bit more personality in there. But I really wanted to use them as a way to get kids excited about STEM and also work in diversity, because we know F1 has a lack of diversity. It's a big mm-hmm. issue. Lewis Hamilton is, you know, a big inspiration to me. And after he put out that Hamilton Commission, you know, I really, you know, the big finding was there is no diversity in the engineering fields around motorsports. And I was like, that sucks. That's terrible. It doesn't make any sense. So that, you know, I did it for those reasons and I hope to do it more. Like mm-hmm. I did kind of go back and forth as should I make her a driver too? But at the end of the day, I wanted to cover both, you know, the driving component, but also the STEM component, because I wanted kids to see, like, you don't have to be a driver to be in F1. Like if that's your goal, there's only 20 spots, it's going to be hard. But there's all these other people that are part of the team. And I wanted to show those people, and those people can come from all sorts of backgrounds too. So that was really important for me. And if you look at the book, like on P for Podium, I do have a female driver on the podium as mm-hmm. well. But, you know, I wanted it to be balanced and fair. And I also realized, you know, the fan base is changing a lot. There was a study last year, I think done by F1, showing that the average age dropped, the overall composition became much more diverse, and women were growing faster in fandom. So it made sense to make it more inclusive for various reasons, you know. And I actually, one of the things I remember of that first trip to Austin is I got to see the W Series race, and I was like, whoa, this is really cool. I mean, these women are badass and they're great drivers and their cars actually look really hot too. I mean, their liveries are much better than...
They're badass. Yeah.
All the neon colors, I was like, yeah. So, you know, I wanted to, you know, have that. It's important to me. And yeah, I hope to do more of it in the future. Once I get into fiction, which is... you know, down the road, that's when I can start telling stories. And there's so many amazing stories of women drivers out there, and engineers and everything. And I just kind of want to, you know, make it so that my kids can see that, look, there's opportunity for both of you equally.
Yeah. I think about even, I guess that would be 15 years ago now when Megan and I were younger kids. We're still kids. We're not adults yet. Sorry. But when we were younger kids and, you know, there wasn't a book about a female engineer anywhere out there. That has totally become in the last 5 years of females can be in STEM just as much as males can be in STEM. And so, I don't know, I'm honored to see a woman in the engineer seat. Because had maybe this book been around when I was a kid, maybe I would have gone into engineering and known more about Formula One. And instead of had a podcast about Formula One, I'd be fixing the cars up. But
you could be designing the cars. That's that's exactly how I felt. Because growing up, I loved cars. Like you know, I was obsessed with cars. But I never really thought about what happens underneath the hood. I didn't understand that. And there wasn't books that really talked about them. So like, I wish I had known about it when I was growing up, because this stuff is so fascinating to me. I always wanted a career, in something car related, but it just like, I didn't know, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't particularly like math, but maybe if I had known that using math is really going to pay off in these sorts of careers and opportunities, I you know, who knows? So that's what I want, you know, that's kind of the reaction I like to see. I want to see.
I think a big thing is that there just wasn't that type of representation in books 20 years ago when I was reading it. And that's really just kind of like a horrible thing to just like admit, because if I think back to some of my favorite books as a child, they were princess books because I'm 28 years old. So 24 years ago, that was really like the books for girls were pink and she was a princess or a ballerina. And the books for boys were blue and green and they were sporty or cars or trains. And there was that big division where now – I mean, and truly, I do believe that it is the subtle changes that are going to make the biggest change in the long run, because it is a 4-year-old girl being able to read a book where she sees a female in STEM. She sees a female racer on the podium. Hell, maybe we'll get a Barbie that's dressed up in a pit crew uniform. Like, maybe we can get an American Girl to do like a pit. But it's those subtle changes where it's a slow, it's slow. It's frustrating that it's slow. But I think those subtle changes are really what's going to impact the next generation of young females who say, like, I grew up believing that I could be an engineer from the first time I remember reading a book about cars.
Yeah,
and it exactly. wasn't something that they had to learn as a 14-year-old, like, hi, I want to do something outside the normal and people are judging me now. And like that battle at, you know, 14, 16, 18, whatever year it will be, whatever age it is, of like, I have to swim upstream to get what I want to do. They've since they were a child, they've been seeing that it's acceptable.
That's totally true. It's something that's going to take time to change. But those changes happen when you're very young. When I was doing research about kids' books and gender parity and all that, I found out that even like the inanimate characters, like a bear or animal characters or whatever, they tended to be male even, you know? And like even like an inanimate object, you know, they would just use male as the gender, as opposed to female gender. It's like 90% of books or something. So we are seeing a lot of change. Like, there are so many great books out there now that speak to all these different things. And, you know, it's changing. But it is something that we won't see the effects of, you know, for another 20 years or so. 20 years.
Hopefully, I really do believe that these, in 20 years, the landscape will look different. And I have to believe that, because if you didn't believe that, it would be really sad to watch a sport that I love so much not try to make change.
Exactly.
And we can sit here and judge whether or not the change they're making is the right or the wrong change, but it is like a hope and a belief that like in 20 years, the efforts to get more women engaged in STEM, in Formula One, will be different. Like, that is just the belief we all have to carry. But it's the subtle things, like having female podcasts, having a female character in the book, having Rosanna Tennant, having Natalie Pinkman. Yeah. It's those subtle things that the more young females see people engage in the activity, the more it will become normalized and really destigmatized.
Yeah, and I think you guys are doing a great job of it. There's so many great other, you know, female content creators out there that are leading the way, and there's lots of young girls looking up to them and realizing that there's all these other opportunities. You know, it's something that sadly will take time, but I think it's going to happen. You know, it has to happen.
I fully believe that it is going to happen.
Is brought to you by Racing Thread, Formula One clothing for any occasion.
Their clothing features subtle, evocative, embroidered designs for your favorite F1 moments.
From Ricardo's Monza Shoei to Sebastian's Australian scooter ride.
From Lewis's Brazilian comeback to Carlando's round of golf.
Whether you're out to dinner with friends, watching the race at home, or cheering in the grandstands,
gone are the embarrassing sponsor logos. Instead, Racing Thread is F1 clothing you are comfortable wearing anywhere.
Right now, Dirty Driving listeners can get 15% off Racing Thread's entire range of t-shirts, sweatshirts, and polos using the code Dirty Driving.
That's Dirty Driving, all capitals, no spaces, for 15% off their entire clothing range.
Head over to racingthread.com to shop F1 racewear. For anywhere.
Okay, so I am going to bring it back to your little big process of going to creating this book, creating the media. So you write the story, did you write the story? Was it you sitting down and just deciding the story? Or was it in conjunction with the illustrator that you have – you work with, correct? You work with an illustrator. Yes. So was it like, hi, here's my story, illustrate? Was it a collaborative effort? How does that part of the process, A, come to be about? And B, what ideas did you bring to the illustrator? Or was it totally on them?
So it's kind of two parts. So basically – I wrote the book, and the first book is an ABCs. So I actually got help with my kids, from my kids. Like, I can vividly remember the moment where we were sitting by the pool, and I just wrote down the alphabet. I had my laptop up, had the, you know, and we just went letter by letter, saying, like, what could A be? What could B be? And, like, we just kind of listed out a bunch of different things, and, like, they helped me figure out what we should do. And then after that, I kind of figured out what the right mix of letters was and terms, because the goal of the first book is really to be a intro and like a companion to a Grand Prix weekend. Like, it covers like the basic things that you need to know, because you can't pick up, you can't just like put on a race and expect to understand what's happening if you have no context. But I kind of go through and explain the basic, you know, there's aerodynamics, yellow flag, there's box, you know, like all the things are meant to give you a quick intro. And, you know, I wrote them with both kids and the parents in mind. And with respect to the illustration, I basically, and this is typically how like books, kids' books are written, like someone writes a manuscript and then you work with an illustrator to bring it to life. I was fortunate to find an amazing illustrator. His name is Wei Ren. He's based in China. I've actually never spoken to him on the phone, never seen him. We communicate solely over email. But it, it took me a while to find them, to find him, because basically I had like a brief that I had put out to a bunch of different illustrators and designers, and no one was quite getting it. And then I came across like an illustration on a Pinterest page that led me to his account on what's called Dribbble. It's like a platform for designers. And I reached out. And I did give him a good amount of direction, because I have, you know, because I have a marketing background, I'm just kind of used to doing it. So I did like a mood board. And that was based a lot on posters, like those vintage racing posters. Because those I remember, and I, you know, like Monaco obviously it has probably the, it's probably the most, you know, common one, but I remember seeing that. I was like, this looks so cool, and it encapsulates like so much in just one image. So my goal was to create each illustration of that ABC book would be a really cool, something like a poster, but like with a more like child and child friendly kind of vibe to it. So I gave him the mood board, and then I actually also gave him images of tracks and car liveries. So I was like, I want to incorporate some of these tracks into it as kind of like Easter eggs for parents, that are reading along. So like, you'll see like G for Grand Prix has the Abu Dhabi track, you know, F for Formation Lab has the Barcelona track. You know, Silverstone is in there for Extraordinary. And there's like, so I gave him a good, you know, amount of briefing, but like his style of design, like as soon as he did the A for Aerodynamics, I was like, yep, that is exactly what I want. It's like the perfect balance of like cool design, but child friendly, very colorful and bright, you know, not overly complicated. And that's kind of how we started working together. And he knocked it out of the park, and I was so, you know, humbled to have it. And he too, he like, he came from a graphic design background. He hadn't written any children's boy books or illustrated anything, but he was just so excited, and he was, you know, very receptive to feedback. And then we evolved the look for the second book, because I wanted it to be for an older kid. I wanted to take like inspiration from like anime-ish type things. So we evolved the look. But you know, I told him I want like a plane and a car on the same page, and he would pick what type of plane. Like, so there was, there was a kind of a good, back and forth. I wasn't too prescriptive, but yeah. I did have a vision, and he delivered that vision incredibly. So I'm super happy with how that came out.
It is very impressive to me that this is his first children's book, because I would never have guessed that. Because to me, the illustrations are, I mean, they're perfectly geared towards engaging kids, but also, you know, they have like a flow to them. They have the pictures themselves tell a story, or maybe not a story, that's the wrong way. They put you in the scene of F1. Yeah. Having been at tracks, like, they look like you could be at the track. You know what I mean? They're very enveloping, or create the atmosphere is maybe the word I'm looking for. It's wild that you have never spoken to him over the phone, and he is not a designer for children's books already. I would have never guessed either of those things.
Yeah, well, we're going to make some more together. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
What is what's the future direction of Red Racer? You said something about fiction.
Yeah, so I literally have so many ideas. but like you guys and a lot of other F1 content creators, I have a day job, you know?
Because
this is not paying the bills. You know, ideally, I'd have more time to do a lot of it. The most immediate things are the translations that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I obviously have ABCs in English and in Spanish, but as I was kind of promoting those, I get a lot of people asking, like, hey, are you going to do one in Italian? Are you going to do one in Portuguese or Dutch or whatever? And I was like, yeah, that is the plan. That was the plan, but it's hard to do it. So I just started asking people if they wanted to help me with it. And that's how I translated the Dutch and Italian version, which right now they're not out yet, but I have digital versions. And I had Way, my illustrator, also make new illustrations for those. But I did it with like customers who, you know, the Dutch version was a woman who bought my book at the Racing Fan Fest in Miami.
Okay.
And she reached out to me. She's like, I think this would do really well in the Netherlands. You know, Max is so beloved over there. Why don't we, you know? And I was like, yeah, but, you know, I don't speak Dutch. And I was like, do you want to help me with it? And she was like, okay, yeah, that could be fun. So I'm basically building out more versions. The problem is that, like, I am self-published, so I have to figure out how to print them and distribute them, which is a incredibly complicated. and I could do a full podcast just talking about that. but then I also have a third book that I'm kind of in draft form, which is going to be all about like the Grand Prix and basically the rules and strategy and, you know, how to win a race, basically those kind of things, which will kind of be in between ABCs and the all about race cars. And I want to branch out into other leagues. Because I think it's not just F1 that has this amazing potential for education and engagement, but all the other leagues are great too. So I did start writing an ABCs of IndyCar because I have started getting into IndyCar too. Okay. It's kind of a natural progression from F1 to IndyCar. So I started kind of getting into that. And yeah, eventually fiction. I definitely want to do fiction because there's so much of like kind of emotional development and like values that are represented in the sport, like competition, sportsmanship, teamwork, dedication, you know, patience, millions of things that are like, you know, and there's so many rich stories about it. Like, what sport is your biggest competition? Your teammate. Like, that is fascinating. And like understanding kind of the emotional dynamics of something like that, you know, I think could be really fun for kids to read. So eventually I do want to get into that. But, you know, starting with nonfiction and hopefully expand. But I built Red Racer Books to be kind of a platform that could stretch into these other areas. And that's my plan. As long as I can keep selling the books I have now, then I can keep adding more. And I'm really having the best time of my life doing it. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. Like that weekend in Austin where I met you guys, we went to that meetup. Like, it's just so much fun. I can't stop talking about it.
Yeah. It's addicting to talk about. It's addicting to share with people. To see, Megan and I just hosted a watch party. We were both in St. Louis this weekend, and a couple of my friends came that had never watched a Formula One race. And just to hear the questions that they were asking, to talk about it, to introduce them to something that now could become their favorite passion, and just the excitement that you get from everyone about it. And I'd say 9 out of 10 times, it's a great experience, and it's, you know, a new friend for the Formula One community. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's exciting. It's exciting to be a part of something that's growing and that's challenging, and just, you know, you never know what you're going to get every Sunday. You really never know what story you're going to be telling on Monday at work, depending on what happened in the race on Sunday. So, exactly. It's incredible.
Yeah. I just wish more people at work knew about it instead of talking about the football game or the baseball game. No, not knocking those sports, but it'd be fun to, at the water cooler, so to speak, have more fans.
We will get there one day, I'm sure of it.
We have to, because, I mean, I made the reference about the football player earlier, but, I mean, I'm really, like, I don't even know what's happening in other sports this year, but you want to talk to me about qualies last Friday? I'm so in.
Exactly. And you know what? I think that F1 is actually, once you get in, it's pretty easy to follow as a fan. I mean, there's only 20 drivers. There's 10 teams. You know, you don't really have to memorize a bunch of people. It's not like, and if you've ever played fantasy football, you know how complicated that can be.
Fantasy F1 is way easier. There's so 20 drivers and 10 teams.
So much easier. I love it. And I did that this year, and like that got me even more into the sport.
One of the selling points of F1, I tell people all the time, they're like, I don't know if I can add another sport to my roster. I'm like, look, it's technically only 22 Sundays of your life. If you really just want to only watch the race, it's only 22. Even if you add in Saturday, that's only 44. That's less games than most sports.
Totally. It's definitely manageable, you know, compared to some other sports. Yeah, that have like endless games and, you know, yeah.
I knew that F1 was the sport for me when it was a Sunday morning sport, because I was like, I don't have the patience to sit on the couch and watch 3 games in a row. I can get all of my sports action in 2 hours is what I originally told myself. And now it's become all Sunday is F1, because after the race, I then have to watch the radio rewind. I watched the race in 30. I got to read every article. So it's become a Sunday thing, but originally it wasn't.
Yes, totally. I totally feel you on that.
Okay, we've got a couple more questions for you. Okay. The next one is, tell us about your best experience you've had since starting your journey with Red Racer Books and writing these stories.
Oh man, that's such a tough question, because I've had a lot of great experiences. I'm not bragging. It's just like, I've been blown away by the reaction that people have had, that the community has had. You know, it hasn't been all great. There's been lots of ups and downs, and I certainly have had doubts, and I'm like, what am I doing here? Am I really doing this? But I it's hard to say one. Like, one thing that I really love is getting feedback from parents and kids that have bought the book, read it, and they're like, oh my God, thank you so much for making this. Thank you for like giving me something that I love to share with my kids. Some of them are like new fans, but I've one reached out as like a 3 generations of fandoms. Like, I've never seen anything like this. This is amazing. This is so great. That stuff, like, and I get a kind of a new one every so often, and like, it blows me away. And like, some people send me like videos of them reading with their kids. And I'm like, I get really emotional because I'm like, oh my God, I'm actually making an impact, which is, you know, what I hoped to do, but I didn't expect. So those sorts of things are really what keep me going. But also, you know, like this year, I think going back to Austin was that week was just like the week of my life. Like, yeah. It was amazing. You know, that day that we met, like I had gone and done my first live show on TV, like a news show. Like, I've never done this before. They were talking about my books. And then and then we went to the coffee shop, and then like people started asking me, and like I met you guys, and like, and then we went to the Williams thing. I met Josh Capito. While I was there in line, I was holding the book because I wanted him to sign it. A guy came up to me. He's like, "Are you Andy?" And it was a guy from Michigan who bought my book in English and in Spanish because he's Latino also. And he was there with his mom, and he just like saw that I had the book. He's like, "Are you the guy who wrote it?" And like, it was just like the nicest moment because I had never expected anything. And he showed me photos of him and his son reading it, and I was like, I was like emotionally moved. And just like that, you know, and it was like just the best week. The race was great. All the stuff around the race, like that was definitely a high point. The only downer was that my family wasn't with me, you know, but as soon as I got back, you know, my kids were like, "We're famous in Austin now."
Oh my God.
Because they had like showed video clips, you know, of them. And but like, I think the best moment was when my daughter, she was filling out like she's in third grade now. She was filling out like one of those things. It was like, "What's your favorite food? What's your favorite color? Who's your hero?" And she wrote, "My papa," because because he wrote a book.
I'm getting misty.
I'm getting misty.
Stop. I'm going to cry.
No. No, I just like love that because it really is like, even when you're sharing it with like a friend, or I mean, I can imagine how wonderful it'll be when you get to share it with a kid. I don't have a kid. It just brings so much joy to share something you love. Yeah. And for the person to understand it, because this is not like we've said multiple times, this is not the easiest sport to understand, but when they find joy and you have this like moment where they understand what you're talking about, and really as a content creator, there are more days that you doubt what you're doing than there are days that you celebrate what you are doing. That is just the absolute truth of it. And so when even one person sends you a message saying, "I appreciate what you're doing," or they send you a video or anything that makes the experience feel like, okay, at least one person is thankful for what I'm doing, that sparks joy. And so I got goosebumps when you're talking about it, because it's hard. It really is hard to like start an endeavor like this.
Yeah, it's been a huge challenge for me because I don't know much about the book business, and I'm kind of doing it on my own, learning as I go. I'm learning a lot of things the hard way, but that's okay. But like every time I have like a tough moment, I just like think back or look at like some of the emails and messages I've gotten, and I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna keep doing it, you know? And I'm sure you guys have had those moments as well. And when you get to meet somebody in person, it's even better, you know? Those moments of connection, that's what makes it worthwhile.
So I saw the pictures of you and your kids at the news station. They looked amazing in their merch. My question is this is an easy one, or maybe a hard one. Who are your kids' favorite drivers?
Yeah, so my daughter is hardcore Lewis. Yeah, she loves
Lewis. We
love
this. That. Love her.
And I tried to get her onto Lando at the beginning. I did buy her some Lando merch or some McLaren merch, but she wasn't feeling it. And then like Lewis, like she got to know him more outside of the racing, I think. And she was like, so she's hardcore Lewis.
Okay.
My son likes Max. And he likes Bottas and Lewis.
Yeah. I am a VV fan. I'm a VV fan.
Yeah, he loves Bottas. I don't know. I think it was, I don't know why, but he's just hardcore Bottas. And like, he likes Max. I think all kids like, you know, the winner, you know?
Yeah.
And,
oh yeah.
But he's liked him from the start. I didn't let him hear that bit of radio that happened last
Smart move.
yeah, I mean, we all kind of have different drivers, but yeah, he's also Lewis too. Like he's moving over to the Lewis side as well.
I love that. It must be so fun to have them watching the race with you.
Yeah, well, in honesty, they don't watch the entire race.
Of like, course not.
It's hard for them to sit through it. But my son definitely is getting it more and more into it. Mm-hmm. And my daughter likes it, and she likes it. And, like, she knows the drivers. She likes the character, you know, more like as people, I guess. Mm-hmm. She's not watching the racing as much. But they love the sport in general. And I got to take them for one day at the Miami Grand Prix, and they loved it. You know, it was so cool for them. Yeah, so it's fun to watch it as a family. That's like our thing now. We watch it on the weekends, you know. And if they're not watching, they're still around. And, you know, it's really nice because now they're born into it. So
yeah.
We're going to be lifetime fans, whether they like it or not.
I love that.
Just wait for when Megan and I pop out a kid, because not only are they going to get the Red Racer education –
oh,
but
yeah.
They will be diehard whoever fans.
Sure.
And it will be a family affair just like you have every weekend. So
exactly. Definitely.
Okay, last question before we wrap up. But what is your piece of advice, or what is any advice you have to share with any maybe people who want to be future Formula One writers?
So first off, you know, it's hard for me to consider myself a Formula One writer or a writer at all, because, you know, it's not what I, you know, it's not what I studied for or did, you know, it's something new to me, but thank you.
Pretty so sure much. It says written by, but.
thank you. But because of that, my big piece of advice is ask for feedback. Mm-hmm. It's something I've done with all my books. I actually sent, before I send them to print, I send them around to various people. And, you know, the first time around, I sent it to people in my chat. I sent it to a couple of podcasters that I listened to that I became friendly with. And I just wanted to get feedback because, mm-hmm. you know, I admit I'm not an expert. I don't know everything. And people gave me like great feedback, stuff that I didn't think about, you know. And I continue to do that with my books. And like, I actually implemented a new process that I call beta testers. Mm-hmm. So for my Italian and Dutch version, I actually, you know, put out posts and sent out emails asking for people, because I don't know that many people who speak Dutch or Italian, or, you know, so I'm in order to kind of help our, like, the contributing translator, I put it out there. And it's great because it gets people, you know, to kind of feel a part of something, but also the feedback is great. Like I tell people, please be honest and tell me what's wrong with it. And I learned so much by doing it. And the other piece of advice is like, don't be afraid to ask, like reach out to anybody. You know, I've reached out to journalists. I've reached out to, you know, presenters, like people in the community, people like you, like everybody who loves the sport and, like, you know, cares about it, I want to share it with, because I want to get their take on it. And, you know, that community approach is really important to me. And giving back to the community is just as important, because I don't think I would have gotten this far without that support and without that feedback, because I know I'm not perfect. I know I need to keep working on my writing. That's a skill I need to keep working on, but I want to get the facts right, and I want to make sure it's like fun for kids. I had kids read it too, mm-hmm. and to understand that. But asking for feedback, like, it's very easy to, you know, DM somebody, message somebody, email them. You're not going to get a response all the time, and sometimes, you know, I harass people like many, many times until I finally wear them down. But there's a lot of people that are just really willing to help, and they're like, "Yeah, cool. This is cool. I'd love it," you know. And And, you know, I think that's very easy to do and it doesn't hurt, you know. At first I was worried about like, you know, my IP, but I was like, I got over that quickly. I was just like, you know, these people are in the game too. They're creating content. They're doing their thing. I want to hear what has worked for them. I want to get their feedback. That'd be the biggest thing for me. And it's helped me a lot.
I think that is some of the best feedback, but also very hard feedback to accept when you first start something. Because you're scared of what people are going to say, positive, negative, are they going to take my idea? But you're right. Like, you have to kind of get over it because their feedback is more likely going to help you than it is going to hurt you. And really, any feedback is good feedback in the fact that it will either assist you in knowing what you're doing right or assist you in knowing what you need to change, improve, tweak to make the content better. And it is one of the hardest things to accept, though, in the beginning.
Yeah, it's definitely a little scary when you send out your manuscript to somebody, you know, who is an expert or whatever in that field. Definitely can be a little scary, but it's totally worth it. And not even just in F1, like I ask people about books and like I, you know, joined communities like Facebook groups. I had no idea how useful they can be because I joined ones for like self-publishers and Kickstarters and all that. Like I, it was amazing how much I got out of those and I want to give back. And that's also why, like, within my books, I have a long list of acknowledgments because I want to say thank you to everyone who helped me make it, because it's not something I want to take credit for alone. Like, it was a process that involved a lot of people and everyone helped me make it better. So, yeah.
It's a testament to how the F1 community can really come together and be supportive, especially in an endeavor like content creating, doing something that is promoting the education or the sport in general.
Yeah, totally. And I think F1 community is great. I mean, there's definitely, you know, there's tensions, there's definitely trolls. It's definitely harder on women. I'm sorry about that. you know, but the people I've found who are, you know, genuine in it and like, you know, like us trying to do something to improve the sport, improve the community, those people are, you know, very friendly, very welcoming and helpful. So reach out.
I love that. Well, we are so glad we asked you what Red Racer Books was at Joe's Coffee Shop in Austin. And we are so glad that we got to see you not once, but twice at the race. And then we're able to make time in our crazy busy lives to have you on the podcast and talk about the books. Before you leave and we wrap this up, please let everyone know where they can find you, but more importantly, where they can purchase the books.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me on, first of all.
Of course.
This has been a blast. So, yes, I sell my books mostly on my site, redracerbooks.com. And if you use code DIRTYDRIVING, 20% off for your...
Woo!
For your crew. I also sell them on Amazon, of course, as kind of where the go-to of most people. And there's some spots in Miami that are sold, a store called Books and Books. And actually, I'm very proud to be at a store in California called Miha Books, which is a bookstore made for diverse characters of all kinds and authors. And that's what they specialize in. And that's really cool. But RedRacerBooks.com is basically the main hub. And I'm also on socials and I'm pretty active. Trying to create content and engagement that's family friendly and fun. And that's at Red Racer Books.
Thank you so much. We will put all of this on the episode description. So if you missed out, you'll be able to find it there. And again, thank you so much for joining us, talking about Red Racer Books. And I'm very, very, very excited to see the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th installment of the series in the future.
Definitely. Thank you, Megan. Thank you, Katie. It's been great.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week for another episode of Dirty Driving.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us at Dirty Driving Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
Until next time, stay dirty.